Hi, Kevin McCullough. Every weekday we focus on the breaking news of the day and try to get some perspective on it so we can talk about what it means and why it matters. And every now and then I have the opportunity to take the front page headlines and kind of set them off to the side and talk to some of the personalities involved. And I'm really honored to have my next guest. I've spoken with her dad multiple times on this platform over the years. I don't know, maybe 10 or 12 times at least that I've had the former speaker with us. But Jackie Gingrich Cushman is with me, and I first read her name, Jackie, a few years ago when one of your columns appeared on Town Hall, and I write for Town Hall, and so I was like, oh, okay, I wonder if she's related, read the column, saw the bylines, yeah, she, sure enough, she is, and loved how common sense you were in your approach to what you were doing. Welcome to New York. Welcome to the Kevin McCullough Show. It's good to have you.
Thank you for having me on. I appreciate it.
What was it like growing up as the daughter of Newt Gingrich?
So, you know, people ask me that a lot, but that's all I've ever known. What I can tell you is all of my memories involve politics. So I don't have any non-political in terms of he was always running for Congress or
right,
running.
Right, right,
right. So I don't have any pre-congressional runs.
So living
runs.
In the midst of campaigns and service time and everything else is just like breathing air to you.
Absolutely. And so my dad, he ran at the time in a very rural Georgia area. So the 6th District then was kind of south of Atlanta, over to Alabama, down to Griffin. And he ran twice and lost before he finally won in 1978. So we had quite the experience as a family,
right,
of going to, not to radio stations, quite frankly, but going to shopping centers and to little gas stations with two people and anywhere we could to meet somebody and shake their hand.
Well, it's an interesting life for sure. I mean, I remember I was probably 6 or 7 when my parents first got involved in a campaign locally. I grew up in the suburban Fort Worth, Texas area, and there was a guy running for Congress, and he didn't win. And, you know, we stuffed envelopes and sent out mailings and phone banked and all of it, you know, and this was in the early 70s. And I had this kind of memory of that being the first time that I was exposed to the political process in that kind of sense. And I've always wondered, for people like you that grew up with parents who ended up going through that, but then really becoming significant leaders in our country, you know, what that was like a little bit.
And I think really the first few losses really kind of, quite frankly, grounded us because you realize that you actually have to run and win.
Yeah.
And both times were very, very close. He was at 49-point-something%, right, both times. And the great thing about my dad, and I mean, you've talked to him, you know him, is he's so persistent.
Mm-hmm.
Literally the next morning we were up as a family shaking hands at what was then the Ford factory saying, you know, thank you so much for your help. Come vote for me next time.
Yeah.
So you have to always kind of look forward and look towards the next
Was it intimidating growing up with a man who has the level of intellect that your dad has?
No, it's just my dad. So, you know, it's just what there
is. He has recall of fact that is probably on par with, like, any of the great geniuses of man's history.
He has incredible recall. And to your point, I think, quite frankly, he may have a photographic memory. I don't know for sure. I can't see in his mind. But he has incredible recall. And the other thing is my son is almost as good at recalling as my father is. Exactly.
So
that's a little frightening, too.
Yeah. Well, it's one of those things where if you pay attention long enough, you just see him in enough places where extemporaneously he can draw out a thing from 40 years ago when this happened and that was there and then this legislation. And I've only seen maybe 3 people in my life that have ever had that ability, but it's always been something I've been amazed at because I don't have anything near that. I have to write notes about everything. I'm writing notes about what I'm going to say next. We're visiting with Jackie Gingrich Cushman, and her book is Our Broken America, Why Both Sides Need to Stop Ranting and Start Listening. The era of Trump is very different than the era that Newt Gingrich had a significant say in, the Clinton years, and a lot of people look at where we ended up by the time Trump got elected and pointed back to Clinton and to Bush and to Obama and said kind of the consecutive election of these kind of younger guys and guys that were lifelong politicians and kind of had the systems in place. And that was the system. I mean, that was the era that your dad thrived in. You know, the party was big and it grew and he grew a majority and he was able to do what was necessary. How weird was it to see what Trump had to do in terms of even traditional swampy Republicans taking them down to get into the White House, at least from where your dad sits and the perspective that he has, being that it's slightly different than it was when he was there.
Well, I think part of it is you're exactly right. In Our Broken America, I talk a lot about the influence of technology and social media. And that's exactly what Trump does, right? He wants to say something. He doesn't hold a press conference and let all the different newspapers, whatever, cover him how they want. He tweets it out.
Right.
And then he sees what happens. The other thing I think that's really interesting is, to your point, you know, we had all these politicians that had grown up in politics, so they had a way to do things. And Trump is a New York developer, right, then reality TV star. So his way of doing anything has nothing to do with what we've seen before.
Right.
So a lot of times, you know, people get really upset about, you know, how he approaches things or what happens. But I'm like, he's a deal maker. He's testing limits out. He's seeing what might work, right? So it's not all prescribed and all laid out specifically. He's really kind of in the moment trying to figure out what's the best deal, how do I make that deal, and what do I need to test to see if it'll actually work out. And if you look backwards and see what he's accomplished from a policy perspective, it's amazing.
Yeah.
I mean, it's unbelievable.
87-something promises kept in the first term, which, I mean, I think Bush got No Child Left Behind and Obama got health care. And that was literally like their first terms. Bush had 9/11, to be fair. But, well, it's interesting that that your dad. Now, remind me, because when Trump decided to run, a lot of people, and I think your dad was one of them, thought that field that he ran in and amongst with was maybe the most talented presidential field that had ever put forward. And there were, 16 of them that stepped forward, and Trump came in and went and just one by one just dispensed with him.
Well, part of it is he was playing a different game. I mean, he was not playing the traditional Republican get up on the stage, right, and debate in the way in which they debated. It was a full-on assault.
He turned down a debate.
it was a full-on assault, and then he would take to Twitter. He would take, you know, he would do whatever it would take to really reach where he wanted to go. And it's interesting because people, I remember on election night, I'm sure you do too, I knew probably around 8:30 that Trump was going to win.
Yeah.
And part of it was,
as soon as the panhandle had not been called,
exactly.
I was like, that's it. And I had already said a couple of weeks before that I thought he was going to do really well in the Rust Belt. But as soon as North Carolina fell, and then Pennsylvania and Ohio, I thought, okay, this is it. And then like Minnesota and Wisconsin, well, he didn't take Minnesota, but Wisconsin, Michigan were kind of cherries on top. But it was a good night.
It was a good night, but you could, to your point, you kind of tell when the anchors wouldn't call certain states because they weren't coming across like they wanted or hoped, you knew Trump was going to win.
Now, your dad has been, for a traditional politician, he's been a big defender of the president. What has he discussed with you in private that he likes or thinks is going to be a unique historical takeaway from the Trump presidency?
Well, I think the amazing thing about Trump, and Dad has talked about this, is that his ability to learn incredibly rapidly.
Right.
Right. Again, he's not a politician. He hasn't spent 40 years doing this specific thing. And he is just an incredibly intelligent person who rapidly learns, who doesn't always do things people think he should do.
And trust his instincts, big time.
Right order, but he is a rapid learner. He trusts his instincts, and he's not, you know, he's willing to do whatever it takes to make the deal he thinks is best for the United States.
Yeah. All right, the title of the book is Our Broken America: Why Both Sides Need to Stop Ranting and Start Listening. Who's ranting?
Oh, well, I would say a lot of people are ranting. We're not ranting, right? We're talking, right? But if you listen to a lot of the the commentators or base look at the whole presidential candidates on the left side. They're all ranting about something. And the challenge I think we have as a country is that we're in this cycle where, you know, we have a lot of people that, let's say, we're a terrible country, we're horrible. And my point is, you have to really focus on the positive and what we've done. No, we're not perfect, but we're the best country on earth. We need to accept that, focus on our problems, and move forward. And sometimes I do feel like Republicans, you know, when the left does something that looks nuts to us, that we rant back to them. And I'm not sure that's really helpful. Yes, we need to stand up for our principles. We need to call things out as they are and say, you know, this isn't right or we don't believe that.
Yeah.
But I really think the whole middle of the country is so sick of the ranting and raving that they're not paying attention. So really, to reach that center, which you need to have to govern, we need to be able to have civil, you know, conversations about things we believe in and articulate why our vision is better for the future, and then have them come join us.
If that's true, and I'm not saying that it's not, and I've evolved on my own thoughts about the middle and the tone and everything, because Trump, he set off a new paradigm. Like, everything was off kilter when he came into office. But given the fact that Trump has held something like 94% of the Republican base through his first term, is not something that's done very often. And, you know, Roe's strategy for Bush was to get the base to turn out, he needed, you know, 2% more black mm-hmm. churchgoers in Ohio, and he found them and he went and got them. But it was basically excite the base, turn out the base, and then use that for legislative victory to go in and get things done, supposedly. Nothing like what Trump has done. But 2020 is going to be interesting. Is that base going to hold, do you think, now, even if it's perceived that the ranting and the, you know, not listening is a part of this national discussion?
I think what happens is even if you have a short-term win, which the base may hold, so that may work for 2020, is that over time that base is going to shrink and you're going to be in trouble. So my theory...
Oh, the day that a Trump's not on the ballot, you've got a whole different ballgame.
Right. So my theory is you can't just win an election. I mean, yes, you need to win an election, but you really have to look for the long term. And I'm looking for not only the rest of my lifetime, which hopefully is going to be a while, but also for my children's.
Gotcha.
Which really means you have to build a bigger base, which means you have to really think about how do you communicate to people. And I never, in our broken America, I never say we should give up our values or we should roll over and agree with what they want to do. What I say is we need to be able to be in a discussion and articulate very clearly why our vision is better and be able to win them over. Because I don't think you win them over in the long term by screaming at them.
No, and the one thing that I will say about your dad, and I think that you're embodying it today, is that the Gingrich stamp has always been reasoned debate and winsome debate. I find that if we sometimes go away from labels completely, mm-hmm. so there's no left, right, there's no liberal, conservative, there's no progressive, traditional. But if you just talk about the inherent intrinsic idea itself. So you go to work in the morning, you draw a paycheck. Who gets part of that paycheck and how much? All of a sudden, nobody is sitting there going, well, what would Barack Obama say or what would George Bush say? Instead, it becomes a discussion of a philosophy. Well, I don't know. I did all the work to earn that paycheck. So what degree do I get? And like, I just think that if we taught like, you know, political science, even from that perspective at the university level, you'd be turning out different kinds of minds that would actually be geared towards problem solving and towards actual fairness and actual risk reward and all the other stuff that that conservatives have believed for a long time. I've always thought we had the right answers. I think the question that you've stumbled upon is, are we communicating them to the best that we can?
Absolutely. I totally agree with you. I do think we have the right answers or else I wouldn't be talking about this. But I don't think our communication is the best, quite frankly. And I think we allow you know, a lot of the left to set the agenda and then we react to them. And then we look like we're crazy as well for everybody else. But if we can sit down and I talk a lot about this in Our Broken America, if we can work in our local communities to find any problem that we care about and solve it with whoever cares about it, then we really, that's where you make a difference. And one of the interesting things I found for the research for Our Broken America is 64% of Democrats and 55% of Republicans have few or no friends in the other party.
Hmm.
So if you think about a divided nation, and to your point, people aren't looking at, they don't even know you, but they know you're a Republican or a Democrat, and they don't like you.
Yeah.
So we've got to get away from this mentality of, I don't know you, but I hate you, to let me understand who you are and how we can work together.
I think engagement always ends up benefiting everybody that's involved.
Absolutely.
And not just on political fronts. Like if you've got a marriage issue, engage your spouse and say, why are we feeling this way? And it's just amazing how real people sitting face to face having actual conversation begins to solve that. Our Broken America, Why Both Sides Need to Stop Ranting and Start Listening is the name of the book. Jackie Gingrich Cushman, thank you for taking time to be with us today.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.